It is that time of year again.
Oh, help! Does anyone have a calculator?
Myron?
No.
Will you look at those morons? I paid my taxes over a year ago.
Dad, that was last year's taxes. You have to pay again this year.
No, because you see, I went ahead and year-wise, I was counting forward from the last previous... So!
I put the tax forms on top of your to-do pile a month ago.
I have a to-do pile?
That's right. Tax day is here in July. Check your to-do pile. After a three-month extension, excuse me, due to the coronavirus pandemic, the extension brought relief to many taxpayers who have been impacted by business shutdowns, store closings, and lockdowns nationwide. But with mounting concerns about the state's economy, what has the extension meant for the Commonwealth, really? Here with us to talk about that is our friend of the show, Evan Horowitz, who is the executive director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University and former Boston Globe economics reporter. Welcome back, Evan.
Thanks so much, Tiziana. That clip is priceless.
It is, isn't it? And also with us is Greg Bialecki, who's a principal at the investment firm Redgate, and also former Massachusetts Secretary of Housing and Economic Development during and in the years after the Great Recession. Welcome to Radio Boston, Greg.
Hi there.
All right, so, you know, I understand, both of you, that talking about taxes is not the most exciting thing, but in our current economy, it's actually an incredibly important thing. We have to take a look at how things have changed since the original April 15th deadline when the pandemic was just heating up. So I want to ask you, what have we learned and how have things changed since then? Do you think the extension was the right thing to do? Evan, why don't you go first?
Oh, I think for sure it was the right thing to do. I mean, the level of uncertainty in the economy at the time was immeasurable, really, and businesses didn't have a sense for what their revenues were going to look like. If they paid their taxes at that time, could they stay in business? There was really no option, no good economic option, but to let businesses have a little reprieve, figure out what their cash flows look like, whether they could stay in business, how to stay in business, and this three-month delay helped them figure that out.
And Greg, what did people figure out? What do we know about how things have changed?
Well, so I agree with Evan that the three-month delay was a good thing. But the question is, was it long enough? And really, have we learned what we hoped to learn? We thought maybe if we gave ourselves a three-month delay, we'd understand a little bit better. Maybe the disease had calmed down. Maybe the economy was starting to come back. Maybe we could be on the other side of this and figure out how to get out of it. But unfortunately, it turns out the 3 months were still, I think, very early in the process. And it's, for example, we're going to learn a lot about April used to be the big tax month for the state. Now this will be the big month for state tax receipts. And we really don't know how much money the state's going to collect. And that's another good indicator beyond the unemployment rate of how our economy is really doing here.
So to that point, Greg, and Evan, maybe I'll turn to you on this. Greg was saying, you know, turns out we thought we might be further along and we're not. Some, you know, would argue, might argue at least, that we were in a kind of a more optimistic place in the spring, thinking 3 months might be enough. We might get a hold on the virus. Clearly, we do not have a hold on the virus nationally. Some businesses haven't been able to survive the pandemic. That may be worse given where the economy is. So how does that impact tax collections?
Well, I think at this point, you need stimulus way beyond the deferral of tax day. So this was meant to be a temporary reprieve. That's what you got. But it's certainly true. Small businesses need a lot more support. There's talk of extending loan programs. The Fed has a new Main Street lending program. But with a vaccine months and months away, it does seem like small businesses in particular need a lot more support to survive this economic crisis that we're in. But the state also, I mean, Greg mentioned the state. This was a huge issue for the state to give up money in 1 year. Remember, the state's years are different from calendar years, right? The state budget years, they run from July 1st to June 30th. So by deferring tax day from April into July, you actually moved all that revenue into the next year. And it really threw off the state budget. So figuring out now exactly how much money we deferred is going to help with planning for the coming year, which is really essential for healthcare, for education, for getting schools open, for figuring out how much money we have to support people in the Commonwealth.
There is a bunch of stuff about the state that I want to ask, but before we go there, I want to stay with individual taxpayers for just a minute longer. I think the average person doesn't really think about, unless they own a small business, I think the average person thinks about tax day as when they pay their personal income taxes. But there really are some questions, especially for small businesses who have delayed 3 months, and maybe that's been a good thing, but are still in a time of great uncertainty. Greg, can you kind of comb out for us what July 15th tax day is likely to mean for individual taxpayers versus businesses and small business taxpayers?
Yes. Well, for individuals, as you say, for the vast majority of working people, they are withholding taxes through their payroll. And so they might not owe a lot on the typical tax collection day. They might be even hoping for a refund on their tax collection day. So those people are not substantially affected. And then the people who have who would owe more, the people for whatever reason had a very good 2019 and had more income than they expected. So for their personal reasons, they're probably going to be okay too. On the business side, what we're seeing is just that the cash flow of businesses is so terribly important. You may have a business that is still a good business, and there's reasons to think it can make it through if it can just manage its cash in the short term. And that's tax payments, that's rent, that's all those other issues. And I think you're seeing in a variety of fronts, how do we just give small businesses the liquidity to make it through? It may not even be big dollars amount, but when you're a small business and you have no incoming revenue, just getting from month to month, not having to pay certain obligations for a month or two or three more is a big deal.
So let's stay with that, Evan, with Greg's point right there about cash and liquidity. When I ran an organization, to say that I became hyper aware of the difference between my cash and my revenues was probably an understatement. You know, with cash being how much money you have on hand and revenues being how much you earn and are going to earn. It seems like we're at kind of the red siren level for a lot of small businesses on cash liquidity, to use Greg's term. Are we also concerned about red siren levels on revenues, medium and long term? Do we have a double-edged problem here?
I think we do have a big problem. And the cash problem becomes a sustainability problem. That is, it could be that tax day becomes a kind of forcing mechanism for businesses to decide whether they can survive or not, whether it's time to declare bankruptcy because it's just too big a hit on the cash front. You know, today's the day I owe this money. I thought I was going to owe it in April, but I didn't then, and I used that money that I had set aside for taxes just to keep operating for a couple months in hopes that things would come together. But here we are, 3 months later, they haven't come together. I've used up all that money. I have no choice now but to go out of business, declare bankruptcy. I do think this is a legitimate concern and a real problem for businesses, because this will be the first of many such things. You know, we have tax day, which will be a kind of first forcing mechanism. There's a chance that expanded unemployment insurance goes away. Some of the other supports that the federal government's been providing go away. And little by little, it's going to force businesses to close down.
All right. So now let's turn to the state. And Greg, Evan talked about the fact that the fiscal year ends on June 30th, but tax day wasn't until July 15th. You were the Secretary of Housing and Economic Development. When you heard that sort of the revenue day was going to be pushed out past the end of the year, what did the part of you who used to be a state administrator think?
Well, it feels a lot like 2008 and 2009. You know, typically in this state, in most states, the budgeting is a once a year activity. The governor and the legislature sit down with economists and business leaders. They try to make the best forecast of what the economy is going to be like, what the tax revenue is going to be like. And they're usually able to make a pretty good estimate. And they do that once for the year and how much they're going to collect and how much they're going to spend. And that survives with very modest adjustments for a whole 12-month period. Back in 2008 and 2009, we had to abandon that process, and we had to admit that we were essentially going to be recalculating the budget every 3 months, how much we thought was going to come in and how much we had to spend. And so that was a huge difference in the way the state government worked, but it was a reality because you knew that you simply had no way to predict what the economy was going to be like and what tax revenue is going to be like in 6 months. And that's exactly where we are now. If anybody told you they thought what the 12 months from now would be like, you really you couldn't have any confidence in that. You certainly couldn't spend all that money hoping that the taxes would come in, because you just don't know.
And let me ask both of you, in times of financial crisis or where there are shortages, I'm thinking about what goes first. So I'm struck by a letter from the Massachusetts Taxpayer Foundation back in April to the Executive Office of Administration and Finance, suggesting postponing the implementation schedule. This was for the Student Opportunity Act passed last year, which was the school funding bill that was hard work and widely hailed as being beneficial for marginalized and low-income students. So here you have low-income and marginalized students and students of color at a time when we not only have a pandemic, but also a national awakening on racism and imbalance. But it sounds like they may be vulnerable. Who gets affected when the money runs short?
Well, I mean, I would say two things. First is, when you're thinking about the budget, you have to think in terms of trade-offs, because, you know, the state can only spend as much money as it takes in. It's not like the federal government. There's no opportunity to really run a deficit. So you have a certain amount of money. It can only go to a certain number of places. So there are trade-offs, and you have to choose. This is going to be, the math is brutal at times in that sense. Is schools or Medicaid. Remember, most state money goes in one of those two directions, either to education or to healthcare. And if you have to make big cuts, odds are it's going to be in one of those places. The other side is, of course, you could raise new revenue. You know, and in past recessions, the state has done that. The other point I wanted to make is that July will bring some clarity, I think, to the kinds of trade-offs that are necessary. One of the issues with deferring tax day from April to July is that it confounded a couple of things. The state couldn't tell whether it was taking in less revenue because of the deferral of tax day or because the economy had collapsed. And it will finally be able to sort that out now that we get the tax collections. It'll be a lot clearer how much of the lost revenue is due to the fact that the economy collapsed. And once that's clear, you'll know exactly what kinds of trade-offs you're really facing. And you can start making these tough decisions about, well, are we really going to delay implementation of this change to the education funding formula? Or should we raise new taxes? Or is there some other way we can find savings?
So, Greg, we're on a hard clock. We've got about a minute left. Let me ask you, if you were advising state officials now, based on your experience, what should planning look like, and where are key priorities?
Well, first of all, you've got to become short-term thinkers. You have to realize that whether it's 2 or 3 months at a time or whatever, that we just we're getting new information all the time. As Evan says, that today's tax revenues will be another data point. Next month's unemployment rate will be. We just have to take it one small step at a time. And be mindful that it's going to take us a long time to get out of this. Even if COVID clears up, the unemployment rate's going to stay high for the next year or two, probably. And so we have a long way to go. And I do want to add to you, Sandy, you made a great point about priorities. What happens a lot is the things that have been in the budget for a long time tend to stay, and the newer things tend to be seen as more disposable. And that's not the same as really picking which are the most important social priorities. And so it is important to think about that as well. Maybe some of the newer items that we brought online are in fact just as important to fund as some of the items that have been in the budget for a while.
Okay, and that's Greg Bialecki, a principal at the investment firm Redgate and former Massachusetts Secretary of Housing and Economic Development, and Evan Horowitz, Executive Director of the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tiziana.